Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is tax expert Russell Fox. We've asked our listeners for help and questions for Mr. Fox, and we've had a lot to choose from. Russell Fox, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Glad to be back.
Some of the questions we are not including have to do with tax evasion, because ones we are including have to do with tax avoidance. So, Russ, what's the difference between this, and why shouldn't we talk to you about tax evasion?
Well, tax evasion is illegal. I am a licensed, my license comes from the federal government. I'm an enrolled agent. My license comes from the Department of the Treasury. I am only allowed to give advice that is compliant with all laws, federal, state, and local. So if someone asks me, I made $20,000 on this income, how is there some way so I don't have to pay tax on that? My answer is no. You earned that income. That income has to be noted on your tax return. Avoiding tax is allowed. It's a fine line. Tax avoidance is taking all the deductions you're entitled to, taking all the tax credits you're entitled to. But it is not noting income on your tax return. If you happen to be lucky enough, for example, walk in a casino, hit a jackpot, that income needs to be on your tax return.
All right. The federal tax bill that's being discussed in Congress, some kind of tax reform bill may or may not be passed in the near or not so near future. Now, we're taping this show on Tuesday, November 7th, which was 5 days after the proposed tax bill was initially posted, and everything in it is subject to negotiation. So, with all those caveats, Russell Fox, what is in that tax bill that's going to affect gamblers, and what is there that's going to affect basically all of us who are Americans, whether we're gamblers or not?
There's only one specific section in there that directly impacts gamblers, and it's section 1305. And it's on professional gamblers being able to take business expenses that result in a loss. Let me give you a couple examples. Assume a professional gambler has gambling wins of $100,000 during the year, losses of $120,000, and business expenses of $20,000. Under section 165D of the tax code, and this won't be changing under this proposal or any of the proposals, gambling losses cannot be taken in excess of wins, so in my example, the individual's gambling losses are limited to $100,000. He is allowed to take his business expenses of $20,000 to create a business loss of $20,000. That's a result of a tax court case called Mayo versus Commissioner from 2011, where it was ruled that professional gamblers are allowed to take their business expenses. The proposed section 1305 would overrule Mayo, and that gambler would end up with zero for the year. He would not get his $20,000 of losses. If a professional gambler had $110,000 of wins, $100,000 of losses, and $20,000 of business expenses, under current law, he'd report a loss of $10,000. Under the proposed law, he would end up also at zero. That's the only direct impact of gambling in this bill. Now, I've heard people saying itemized deductions for gambling losses are eliminated. Not in this legislation. But there are numerous other pieces in this legislation, and here are some of the highlights. And by the way, I'm going to point out, what is written is not going to be the law. It is going to be more or less passed by the House in its current format, but it will not and cannot pass the Senate as currently written. So we're going to get something, maybe, out of Congress, but it's likely not to look too much like what has been proposed. There's not enough. The Senate is looking at, they want a much less addition to the deficit than the House version. And so that means that some of the changes proposed will not be in the Senate version. So, big items, elimination of the alternative minimum tax. Elimination of exemptions on the tax return. Exemptions, for example, if you have a family of four, you get four exemptions, generally. elimination of the piece limitation for itemized deductions. This is a phase out of itemized deductions at high income. An increase, basically a doubling of the standard deduction. Elimination of the deduction for state income tax and sales tax. So people who live in high tax states, California, New York, they will be paying more in taxes because they will not be able to deduct their state income tax. A reduction in the maximum allowable mortgage interest. It will be based on interest from $500,000 of mortgage debt rather than $1 million, and no mortgage interest deduction for second homes. An increase in the child tax credit. A special pass-through tax rate of 25% on S-corporations and partnerships. However, the proposal limits the impact to 30% generally of the net income of the pass-through entity. Elimination of the federal estate tax and lowering the number of tax brackets to 4. The legislation itself runs over 400 pages as currently written. The summary that was released runs only 82 pages. And it's guaranteed that what passes will not look like what was proposed. Now, there is a major indirect impact of the proposal, and it's because of the increase in the standard deduction. It's almost certain amateur gamblers will pay more in tax. Consider John Doe. He now takes a standard deduction because he rents, and he can no longer deduct his state income tax. He hits a jackpot for $2,000. He has $2,000 of gambling losses, but since he doesn't itemize, he'll pay tax on the $2,000, where before, because he lived, say, in California, he was itemizing. So that's the indirect impact that I likely see out of this legislation.
If that player were to itemize just to be able to offset that win, would he end up paying less in taxes?
Well, yes. Well, on the gambling, yes, but probably no. The reason is you can either take the standard deduction or itemize. So today the standard deduction is $6,300 or so for a single individual. Doubles, that's $12,000 and change. Right now, a lot of people in high tax states itemize because they pay a lot in state income tax. They're not going to be paying, you know, state income tax is no longer deductible. If you rent, you don't have mortgage interest, you don't have property tax. So what are your itemized deductions? Just gambling. If you hit one jackpot for $2,000, well, you can take your $2,000 of gambling losses, or you can take a standard deduction of $12,000.
I see.
But if this amateur had $20,000 in W-2Gs, he would be wise to itemize.
If he has $20,000 of gambling losses, absolutely. And he could still do so. There is, I've seen on various internet forums that gambling loss, ability to itemize gambling losses was eliminated in this bill. That is not correct. There is no such provision. I did a search on the actual proposal for the word wagering, which is how tax code describes gambling, and the only instance of that in the legislation is section 1305.
All right. Let's move on. We got lots of questions from lots of different listeners who responded in several different ways. So one is, when filing as a professional gambler using Schedule C and receiving a number of W-2Gs, the question is, what's the best way to list the sum of those W-2Gs?
IRS instructions state that you total the W-2Gs. What we do is we include a breakout schedule. So let's use an example. W-2Gs, $12,500. Other gambling income, $7,500. Total, $20,000. Unfortunately, the IRS only reads these breakout schedules about half the time. So you may get an IRS notice stating you didn't include the income. These notices, what are generally a CP2000 notice, are completely automated. They're part of the IRS's automated under-reporting unit, and you have to respond even though the notice is stupid. The response is easy. You mail the IRS a copy of your Schedule C along with the breakout schedule, and the IRS, in most cases, just sends you a letter about 14 weeks later, that's how long it takes the IRS to respond to mail, saying, we've closed the inquiry, you don't know anything.
Wait, so you're saying that this is generated because the W-2G is on the breakout schedule, meaning it's not on the line of the form they expect it to be on?
Generally, yes. There's a way to include a breakout schedule when we electronically file that the IRS is supposed to read before sending out these notices, but we've found that the IRS, it's about 50%. And there just isn't a wave with professional gamblers because there's another problem if you include it in other income. That's, if you're an amateur gambler, that's where your W-2Gs go, and that's where the IRS computer expects all W-2Gs. Now, I've talked with the taxpayer advocate office about this issue, and there's supposedly a program in there that if you file, and as a professional gambler, it's supposed to look at your Schedule C, but half the time the IRS computer doesn't, and it's not a big deal. You just respond to the notice, and yes, you have to respond.
So, let me get into the weeds a little bit here on this. For the non-professional, I've heard people say that people that use the session win or loss in their record, as opposed to just the W-2G, right? So I hit a W-2G for $4,000, but on that session, I actually ended up winning $3,200 and change. Okay. And that's the way that the person is recording things. Now, because of this, you're supposed to total all of your wins in one column and all in one box and all of your losses in another box. Because of the way they're doing this, their total wins is less than the total of their W-2Gs.
Almost certainly.
Right. And this apparently triggers another kind of...
It triggers actually the same CP2000 kind of notice. Let's use an example, because I've had clients who've been directly impacted by this. Amateur gambler, he has a full-time job. We'll say he makes $200,000 a year working somewhere. And he has $100,000 of W-2Gs. But he does session accounting, doing a gambling log that is perfect, and has $75,000 of wins, winning sessions, and we'll say he has $50,000 of losing sessions. He puts down his $75,000 on line 21. He puts his $50,000 where appropriate on Schedule A. The IRS almost certainly will send him a notice. Now, what I counsel people to do is attach a statement to the return noting that you're following the session rule, that you're reporting by session, that your total of W-2Gs was $100,000, but because you had gambling losses in the same session, that you're noting $75,000. The IRS will not read that statement. Okay, and that's the truth. The IRS will not read it, but it's been attached to your return, so you've disclosed it. And if you were audited on this issue, the statement would show up in the records. When you get this notice, you respond with the fact that you have been filing using the session method, that you correctly noted it. And ideally, you want to quote a case, and I'm sorry, I do not remember what that case name is, but I have it on file. I will send it to you, the link to the case, so you can add it to the show notes.
Okay.
Okay. And the IRS person reviewing it may or may not realize it's law. If they don't, you may have to do a second letter, and you may have to go into appeals where you have people who actually look at the law. But you're in the right, and eventually you will win on this issue. But it may take a couple of letters. It may be back and forth, because at the low levels, the employees are not likely to understand the difference, and they probably won't know the law.
Okay, so I have a friend who wants to avoid this hassle. And so what he does is, he knows his net. Let's say his net for the year is $25,000 win. So what he does is he totals his W-2Gs, adds 10%, and said, that's my win, and then constructs his losses to equal a $25,000 net.
The problem with that is you may end up paying more in tax. There are a lot of things that are based on adjusted gross income. Your adjusted gross income includes your gambling wins, but not your losses.
Ah.
So when you adjust that, that will get you the right amount of gambling, but you may have other items on your tax return that will change. what we tend to do for our clients who are amateur gamblers is we run it using the full total of W2Gs and see if it changes when we do it by the session method. If it doesn't change, we report it by the W2Gs, even though it's wrong, because it will avoid the IRS notice. But if it does change, you know, an IRS notice and responding to this is pretty easy. It's not that big of a deal because you're in the right. And we also prefer to report taxes accurately.
All right. Another question, another listener. Are online casinos in New Jersey required to issue W2Gs for slot winnings of $1,200 or more?
Yes.
All right. Took a long time for that one. In general, is free play taxable?
The answer in tax is it depends, but that's overall because you had a second part to this question.
Yes.
Let me let you ask.
If a casino gives you a free room, is that taxable?
So the answer is it depends. Let's say you walk into a casino and receive $20 of free play. That's a marketing gift and isn't taxable yet because you can't cash it out. You have to use it. It's not anything that you can really cash out. You just have the ability to put $20 into a slot machine or some other gambling device. Let's say you take that and you play a slot machine or video poker machine and you win $20. Now you have $20 of income. You have an accession to wealth of $20. You have no basis. The money was provided to you at zero, and you've cashed out for $20. That's $20 of income. That's reportable.
Okay, so, but if you use that free play and go eat at the steakhouse and spend $200 of it, that's not, right?
Generally, and we're going to get to the second part, the law is murkier with comps. Most comps are given to you in return for your play at the casino, and they're considered marketing gifts. For example, you're given a free meal at the steakhouse. That's generally a marketing gift. Those are relatively, in dollar costs, small items. However, a few years ago, this is probably 15 years ago now, PokerStars gave players who had enough play a Porsche. Porsches cost a bit of money. Last time I checked, well over $100,000. And that does not meet the definition of a marketing gift. It is, but it's not. And that kind of gift likely needs to be reported because of its size.
Porsches aren't very big.
Yeah, but last time I checked, they're expensive.
Yes.
All right. Does that mean they're subject to gift tax as opposed to income?
Gift tax is... on somebody who gives you a gift out of love. These are not gifts from a gift tax standpoint in any way.
Okay, another question. In keeping a contemporaneous diary of gambling wins and losses, what works and what doesn't work?
Okay, this goes way back to the 1970s when the IRS came out with what is called a revenue ruling where they said that you need to report a contemporaneous written log. Remember, there were no such thing as smartphones in the 1970s. The date, the casino name, the game you're playing, like video poker, the start time, the end time, the table number, if you're at something like a table. You could also put down the slot machine number. You'll find every device in a casino is numbered. It's not for your benefit, but it's for the eye in the sky. And, of course, your result. And you are allowed to use sessions. So if you start at slot machine or video poker machine A, move to B, then move to C, typically I just number them across in my log. You can also use an app. You'd record the exact same information, but the one caveat with apps is you need to regularly back up your data. First, so you don't lose it. All computers, this is my corollary to Murphy's Law, but all computers will crash at the least opportune moment. And the least opportune moment is the day before your IRS audit. And the second reason is, so you can show the IRS in an audit that the information you recorded on November 7th and backed up on November 30th didn't change on the backup on December 31st, and it wasn't created an hour before the audit.
Have you actually had problems with this where somebody has, say, a spreadsheet and... I mean, because if you printed out the spreadsheet, there's no date on it, right? I mean,
this has come up in an audit, and the IRS personnel wanted to see the save dates of it, which we could access. My client religiously backed up where this came up, so we could show it was the exact same spreadsheet. One of the interesting things about most audits is you print everything. In other words, last audit I went to, which was a corporate audit, we had boxes and boxes of paper. We could have put this all in CDs. We had it saved in our paperless system, and we could have transferred this to a CD, but most IRS offices will only accept paper, which, of course, they immediately scan.
Jesus.
All right. Another question. Under Obamacare, which hasn't been repealed and replaced yet, not having any health insurance involves some sort of tax penalty. What's the maximum you could owe by not having health insurance?
For 2017, the maximum penalty is 2.5% of your modified household adjusted gross income, or $695 per adult, $347.50 per child, to a maximum of $2,085. The exact numbers for 2018 have not yet been announced, but they'll likely be slightly higher. There is a tie to inflation, the Consumer Price Index.
Okay. Can a player form a C Corp or some other something so that he can provide a tax ID when he hits a jackpot rather than a Social Security number?
Casinos generally do not allow gamblers to use employer identification numbers instead of Social Security numbers. For example, even a professional gambler with a sole proprietorship can get an EIN to use in place of his social. For example, if he has backing. We actually recommend that very strongly. However, casinos won't accept that because the person is gambling. Now, a strategy I've seen a professional gambler do is to form a limited liability company. For that limited liability company to make an S corporation election, and then the professional gambler files a tax return as an S corp. He can write a letter, basically a contract between himself and the S corporation. Of course, he owns the S corporation or LLC acting as an S corporation, so that all the gambling income that is individually his is really that of the S corp. That is a step that the tax court wants to see. Now, there are some caveats. You have to pay yourself with an S-Corp a reasonable salary. This strategy does not always result in a lower tax, and there are a lot of gotchas. There are also legal issues that vary by state. So this is something you have to discuss in advance with your tax professional and your attorney.
But that still doesn't get around the problem of being able to give the casino an EIN instead of a Social Security number.
I am not aware of any U.S. casinos that take EINs, with one exception, which is you are allowed in the state of Nevada, a corporation can do sports betting. And that is the one exception where an EIN is accepted, except that sports betting is not reported on W-2Gs currently.
Right. But the See, the problem is for some of our listeners is not about trying to, actually, I think we have a question about this coming up, right? About hitting a video poker jackpot using a, why don't we go to that question and then we can.
I think
I remember it. It's basically you're playing in a casino under a different name and you hit a W-2G and you give them your real Social Security number, but they have the wrong name that's associated with that Social Security number.
There is, unfortunately, a major issue with that. Most casinos will require you to fill out a Form W-9. Form W-9 is an IRS form where you swear under penalty of perjury that the information is correct. So, what are you going to do? Violate perjury laws, which I'm not an attorney, but I don't recommend. Now, technically, the penalty of perjury per the instructions is only on the Social Security number. But if the casino discovers it's false, and they will because the IRS matches the information on 1099s and W-2Gs, the name and social both don't match, it's going to generate what is called a B notice. And that B notice will be sent to the casino saying, Well, Russell Fox, your social security number is not 1234567 89.
Also, some casinos, the MGM...
And they're right, it's not.
Yes, it's not.
Some casinos, I know in particular the MGM casinos, if you have ever given them your social security number in the past with your real name, and you now use that social security number, it will pop. So even if you've had a legal name change, and you, as a way of them not knowing who you are, if you go in with your new legal name and give them that old social security number, it will pop immediately, and they will come to you to say, why are you using this number? This number belongs to your old name.
For example, I've seen that with a client who got married, and that's an easy one to explain. You know, I got married. I'm no longer Jane Smith. I'm now Jane Doe. And I don't think the casino had any issues once that was explained.
Right.
But the problem is that, additionally, my understanding, and I am not an attorney, but you're getting in trouble with the casino because the player's card information has been submitted as wrong. Additionally, just because a certification in the instructions says the name is not being sworn under penalty of perjury, I could certainly envision a court stating the whole thing is being sworn under penalty of perjury. And since the social security number is tied to the name, you give the wrong information, you are committing perjury. Perjury is a major felony.
Yeah. We don't mind fooling casinos, but you don't want to mess with the federal government.
No, I think a better strategy is probably to avoid doing this.
Yeah, now...
Yeah, but you're not a professional gambler.
I was for a year and a half, and I wasn't in the blackjack, video poker, trying to deceive casinos. I was playing regular poker, where there was no deception necessary of the card rooms.
Are you aware of any way for a person to change their social security number, especially given what happened with Equifax?
Unfortunately, generally, no. There are very, very rare situations where it's allowed, but it is very hard to change a social security number. It basically almost, I'll say, takes like an act of Congress. Okay, I know it can be done. The most likely scenario is very rare. Like, for example, somebody who is a non-citizen working in the U.S. obtaining a social security number, years later comes back, immigrates to the United States, and is assigned a new social security number. I've seen that. I've seen ITINs where once you become a U.S. citizen, you get a social security number. But a social security number is assigned for life. Now, I will tell you, in these days of identity theft, it's a huge issue, and Equifax is going to cause problems, assuming those socials end up on the dark side of the world, which I suspect they will. And I was a target, too. It was probably 75% of the people who are listening to this were targets.
Is it true that the United States is the only country to tax gambling winnings?
No. Very, very not true. Most countries do tax gambling. The U.S. is one of the few countries to tax your worldwide income. But, for example, Israel taxes gambling. Czechoslovakia does. Russia does. France does. All of Scandinavia does. In fact, Denmark, if you gamble outside of Denmark, you can be taxed up to 73%. The United Kingdom and Canada are two of the few countries that do not currently tax gambling.
If you hit a $20,000 royal flush and take it in cash, is a CTR filled out in addition to the W-2G?
CTR is a currency transaction report. It's supposed to be filled out any time $10,000 is given out or given in to a casino. So the answer is yes.
And you can avoid that by just asking them to give you a check if you don't want the CTR filed.
That is absolutely correct. If you get it in casino chips, that is considered cash. And
oh, really?
CTR is supposed to be filled out.
That's odd, because a $20,000 win at a table game in chips is not.
No, but again, FinCEN is cracking down on the issuance of CTRs and wants a lot more of them done, and especially suspicious activity reports. The casinos are issuing more and more. CTRs, by the way, are not that big of a deal. There are so many of them issued, very few are investigated. When I last attended continuing education where this topic came up, IRS said well under 5% of CTRs are investigated. However, locally here in Las Vegas, 100% of suspicious activity reports are investigated.
Wow. 100%.
All.
Then, although in a casino, often they're anonymous. They're filing them, the player is anonymous. So.
The player can be anonymous, or they may, but you are not made aware when a suspicious activity report is issued. So, for example, if let's say you are going to make, this is an issue like businesses. Let's say you run a laundromat where you get cash, and at the beginning of the day, at 12 noon, your laundromats have $5,000 in cash. Well, you go to the bank and deposit it. The end of the day, you have another $6,000. You deposit that. You're almost certain now to have a suspicious activity report issued because you've made two deposits that total $11,000 in one day, even though it's good business practice so you don't keep a lot of cash. It may be better from a tax standpoint or non-SAR standpoint to do one deposit of $11,000 and have the currency transaction report issued.
Yeah, when people ask me, I actually recommend to them that they have some CTRs every year just so they can say, look, I'm not avoiding these cash transaction reports, you know?
I agree completely. I had poker player who won a lot of money in, we'll say, Iowa, and said, well, my bank doesn't really know much about CTRs and how to do them right because it's so rare. You know, Iowa gambling is not that big as in, for example, here in Las Vegas or in New Jersey, and said, but I have this $180,000. Said, go into the bank, just allow yourself an hour, sit down, bring a newspaper, bring your smartphone, bring some reading material, and go big, and just deposit it all at once, which is what he did, and it took an hour.
Wow.
And I guess he was lucky they didn't close his account.
he also did receive a W-2G for it, so it wasn't as big a thing.
Yeah.
If our listeners wish to get in touch with you, is emailing you at rcfox@claytontax.com the best way to do that?
Yes.
All right.
And we should mention your website is too, right?
It's my tax blog is taxabletalk.com. Regular website is claytontax.com.
All right. We're going to actually go through some of his taxable talk in a bit. Some more questions first. Somebody is a United Kingdom citizen where HMRC has no interest in taxing gambling winning. This player says he normally doesn't answer to the IRS. What problems would he encounter if he comes to Vegas on vacation and makes some significant winnings?
Most casinos in Las Vegas have either the ability to issue an ITIN or issue the paperwork that allows you to get an ITIN. Now, last March, the IRS was going to stop that ability. The IRS relented when the casino industry, basically through various senators, said this was not a particularly good idea. And the IRS relented. So if you, for example, go into the Rio and you hit a jackpot and you're a UK citizen, the Rio will either issue you the ITIN or issue the paperwork that allows the ITIN to be issued, and there'll be no withholding. The US-UK tax treaty specifies there's no withholding for UK citizens for gambling winnings in the United States. There are some casinos that are not able to issue ITINs. In that case, you would have 30% withheld.
And you get that back?
You can get that back by filing a Form 1040-NR at the end of the year, and at the same time applying for an ITIN. And 6 to 10 months after you file it, you will get a check in U.S. dollars back.
That sounds like fun.
Mm-hmm.
But we should mention that that isn't going to happen for table games. This is only if you hit a $1,200 jackpot or more on a slot
$1,200 or video poker. If you're at table games, there is no withholding, no matter what country you're at currently. There's only a few things in a casino where there's specified withholding. Poker tournaments, net win of over $5,000, and various slot video poker jackpots are the far most likely where you'd have withholding. Also horse racing.
If this guy wasn't that winner of $20,000, would he have any trouble taking the money back out of the United States back home?
No, but there's a thing he needs to do, probably both leaving the U.S. and entering the United Kingdom. Leaving the U.S., there is a customs form. I don't know what the form number is, but there is a form you have to fill out if you're taking $10,000 or more total out of the U.S., and he would need to fill that out if he's taking it out in cash. He's taking out a check. I don't believe you have to, but it's worth checking the regulation on this. The UK, I believe, also has the same rule. If you're importing £10,000 into the UK or equivalent, so there might be some paperwork that has to be issued. But as far as problems, as long as you do the paperwork, none.
Right, and if you want to avoid that, most casinos will wire the money for you if you want to just wire it home, or they'll give you a check.
Yeah, and I was going to suggest wire it. Most casinos are very happy to do it.
Okay, we got a question yesterday. It was a six-part question. I didn't talk to Russ about it until 10 minutes before the show. So he's able to answer the first and sixth one off the top of his head. The other ones, he would want some research on. So we're going to include them in our next Russell Fox show, of which there will be more. But that's why the middle two-thirds got eliminated temporarily. Number one, I want to enlist a friend to play blackjack. They will risk no money. It will just be my bankroll. I don't play. I will pay them $20 an hour. How will each of us fill out our taxes?
Well, there's two things that have to be done. If you're paying somebody to do something, and it's $600 or more, and it's a business, you have to issue a 1099. So if that hourly gets to $600, the person who's paying has to issue the person who's being paid a 1099 for that non-employee compensation. That's fairly easy, fairly simple. You file those with the IRS. They have to also be sent to the recipient, and that has to be done by January the following year. So there's a deadline for filing that kind of 1099 by January.
January 31st.
January 31st, unless it falls on a weekend, then you have the next business day. You also submit those with a Form 1096, which is the cover page if you're paper filing them to the IRS. IRS instructions on this are very clear on their website. The IRS website's actually quite good, irs.gov. As far as the income, the person doing the gambling doesn't have any income. It's blackjack, there's no reporting. You, the person doing the bankroll, or has the bankroll, you have all the income. So this will be another session for you, if it's one session, where you report the $500 of gambling income or $500 of gambling loss or whatever it turns out to be. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward.
So the person out doing the playing has to report back to you, and then you record it as if you won it or lost it.
Right, because it's your income. It's not his. He has no income.
Right.
He has no income from the gambling. He has income from being paid to sit there and play blackjack. But he has no income. Whatever the gambling income is from the blackjack is not his income.
And the bankroller can deduct the 1099 from the net winnings of the gambling income?
No. Well, if he's a professional, it'll be a business expense. If he's an amateur, no. It's not a gambling expense. You're not allowed to deduct gambling expense. It is a gambling expense.
Well, he's not even a player, right?
So, but it's gambling winnings. Gambling winnings are the same whether, if let's say I paid you to gamble, I know there's this great machine that is ready to hit. I'm going to pay you to just pull the handle for several hours. Okay? Well, And let's assume I'm a professional gambler. Well, is that a deductible business expense for me? Yeah, of course it is. I'm paying you to do something that's going to increase my income. That's certainly an expense related to my income. I deduct that. That's a business expense for me. But if I'm an amateur, I'm not allowed to deduct business expenses.
Yeah, it just seems to me that you would, if you have an employee, it seems to me that you have a business of gambling.
Well, that certainly lends one to think that, but if it's a one-time thing and it's like 3 hours at $20 an hour,
yeah.
I mean, a lot depends always on facts and circumstances.
Okay, here's one that I think I could answer accurately. Do you pay taxes on gambling income from other countries?
Absolutely. The U.S. taxes you on your worldwide income. Whether you have gambling income from Moscow, Idaho, or Moscow, Russia, does not matter.
I would have said Paris, Texas. And
oh,
Paris,
you know what? I want to ask about something that wasn't on the list, but because of Paul Manafort, we should talk about this. Because you brought this up, you made a really interesting comment recently that you thought you handled 5% of the Bitcoin returns in the United States, right? Because you're supposed to declare Bitcoin as if it's a foreign bank account or something? Well, can you talk about that?
Well, actually, this was one of the questions. I'll read this question. Some of our listeners use cryptocurrencies, perhaps Bitcoin or maybe Ethereum. If you exchange one cryptocurrency for another and have what would be called a capital gain were it done with stocks, is this a taxable event? So, a few years ago, the IRS ruled that cryptocurrency is treated as property. Anytime you dispose of a Bitcoin, you have a taxable event that must be reported on Schedule D. This includes spending the Bitcoin, trading it in for Ethereum, selling it on an exchange, whatever. Those are all capital transactions that must be reported.
I pay $6 in Bitcoin for a taco. I report that $6?
Yep. You have to note how much in Bitcoins you sold, what the basis was, what you sold it for, and you have a capital gain or loss. Yes, every single time you dispose of Bitcoin. That is what the IRS ruled.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, FinCEN, which is yet another alphabet soup government agency, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, ruled that cryptocurrency is a currency, not property. So if you get into the business of selling Bitcoins, I'm not talking about selling to an exchange. I'm saying you go out and sell to anyone and everyone. You may need a money transmittal license. That's absolutely something to discuss with an attorney ASAP. The U.S. Department of Justice is actively investigating people who are selling Bitcoins. And I'm aware of some investigations. That's all I can say about it. Now, your question about my doing 5%. The U.S. IRS issued a summons to a company called Coinbase, which was one of the largest U.S.-based exchanges for cryptocurrency, wanting all the records of people in 2015 who sold Bitcoin. Because the IRS checked their records and only 802 individuals reported Bitcoin or cryptocurrency sales for all of 2015 in electronically filed returns. I was curious. I went back and checked how many of my returns had Bitcoin. 40. Do the math. That's 5%. There's no way I'm doing 5% of the returns of people who have Bitcoins. So that IRS is right. There's a lot of people who haven't been reporting it.
Go figure.
Now, wasn't there some tie-in to the having a foreign bank account? Well, or the way it's treated?
No. Yes and no. There are some exchanges which are based outside of the United States and could qualify as foreign accounts. For example, blockchain.info is based in Luxembourg. So if you have over $10,000 sitting at blockchain, you may have a foreign account and you may have a requirement to report on the FBAR.
Oh, wait, so a foreign account has to have $10,000 or more in it in order to...
You have to have $10,000 aggregate amongst one or more foreign financial accounts to have an FBAR filing requirement. So if you have today $4,000 on account one, $4,000 on account two, those are your only accounts, that's $8,000. You do not have to report an FBAR.
Ah.
But if you get up to $10,000, even for 30 seconds, you have an FBAR filing requirement for that calendar year. And it's $10,000 aggregate. So if your maximum balance on site one is $9,000, but you then move all $9,000 to site two, well, that's still the same $9,000. You didn't reach $10,000. You do not have an FBAR filing requirement.
And if you have two sportsbooks accounts that are offshore with $6,000 in each, those are not foreign banks, right? So you don't need
those
to...
Those are online gambling accounts are foreign financial accounts per the U.S. government.
Okay, so you would
have to file an FBAR if you have any sort of online gambling account.
That's over $10,000.
Well, $10,000 aggregate.
Right.
At any time during the year. Millions of FBARs are filed. There is no tax paid when you file it. It's just a reporting requirement. The penalty for willfully not filing an FBAR starts at $100,000 or half the balance in each account, whichever is greater, plus possible prison time. I know which way I come on this.
Oh, that's all. I thought it would be a serious matter. Okay. Good. We're talking to Russell Fox. We got lots more questions for him. We're going to take a brief break and for some commercials. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. In November, the month-long promotion involves half-price Smith's $50 gift cards. Normally, $50 in cashback or free play is earned by earning 16,667 points. In November, if you earn and redeem half that, 8,334 points, you get the gift card. There's a limit of 10 gift cards per person. On Thanksgiving Day, 320 players will earn $100 each in a hot seat promotion, where the money is given out approximately once every 3 minutes between 8 a.m. and midnight. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the game. The game of the week is 10 Play Ultimate X. This is a 10 coins per line game where winning lines this hand earns you bonuses on the same line next hand. Although it is difficult to play accurately, this has turned out to be one of the more popular games now. The Wizard of Oz website provides strategies for a number of pay schedules. Back to Russell Fox and tax questions. We had a couple more from a listener that before Richard so rudely interrupted me, so I'm going to go back to that. A ship sails a few miles out from the U.S. coast. We're in international waters. Gambling occurs. Do you report gambling wins and losses that occurs? Teacher, I know this one.
Of course you do.
All right. Another question. I have both a SEP IRA and a solo 401k. Is there any downside to using the solo 401k just for the $18,000 elective deferral it allows, and to use the SEP IRA for the roughly 18.5% of net profit contributions it allows? The reason I would consider doing so is some years I might prefer the options provided by the SEP IRA.
There's no downside.
Okay. Taxabletalk.com. This is a blog that several different entries a month. I know what it takes to maintain a weekly blog, and you're way outdoing me. So you're spending lots of time doing this, and it's a very good service to players and to just normal people who have to pay taxes.
Now, or are interested in what bozos do on their tax returns.
Yeah, speaking of bozos, there was an article about 3 weeks ago where you had about five silly things your clients told you this year. Please share that with us.
Okay, I'm going to summarize it. First one, going from 5 to 1. I sold things on the internet, so I don't owe state tax on it, even though I reside in a state with state income tax. It doesn't work that way. If you reside in a state with state income tax, you owe state income tax on your worldwide income. We have a dual tax regime in the U.S. Some places, a triple regime if you live in an area which have city or local income taxes. For example, New York City has a city income tax. Philadelphia does. Indiana has local taxes. Kentucky and Pennsylvania do. And so you can owe 3 taxes. So, yes, your business may be conducted over the internet, but you're doing some work in your home, and trust me, the state of Virginia wants its share.
All right, that's number 5. Number 4.
I don't want to file a New York tax return, even though I'm getting a full tax credit for it on my California return.
Oh, good.
So, I had a client, Mrs. Jones, and she didn't like it when her employer withheld New York income tax when she was there for 4 weeks, really working in New York, and said, how dare New York tax me? I don't want to file the return. So I explained to her that you don't really get a choice. You were there. California, you're going to get a full credit for it because you're paying more in California tax than New York tax on it. So it's really just paperwork. And yes, you have to send, I think it was $20 to New York, but you're getting that back on your California return. I still don't want it. And then I said, well, if you don't, you're going to get a bill from New York in a few years, and you'll pay penalties, interest on it, and you'll pay me to do a lot more work then. Or you're going to pay an extra probably $5 to get this all done right the first time. Oh. Now, having said that, the issue of non-resident taxation is a big one. Each state has different rules. For example, this really doesn't affect gamblers as much as it does people who work as employees.
It does, but we'll talk about it after we finish the sentence.
That's a little different, but what I'm talking about is, for example, people who work 1 week in some states, subject to state income tax in that state. Some states it's 4 weeks. Some states it's number of hours. Some states it's dollars. Each state is different. There are proposals in Congress, which I hope one of them gets attached to the new tax bill if it passes, which would make it uniform. It would make tax professionals' lives easy.
There's several states, Louisiana and Iowa are two, which would withhold 5 or 6% of W-2Gs. And so if you get W-2Gs in those states and get that money withheld, you have to get any part of it back, you have to submit a non-resident state income tax.
Yep, and that's, I can, off the top of my head, Louisiana, Iowa, Indiana, Ohio, California. Mississippi does not allow them to be refunded. And only Alabama recognizes Mississippi's. Mississippi calls it a gross receipts tax, not an income tax.
Is this California new? Because about 3 years ago, I played a lot in high-stakes video poker in California, and money was not withheld.
It has to be not at an Indian casino. Indian casinos are sovereign. Indian gaming is sovereign. So they are not subject to state income tax. It is only in really the card rooms of California, which is more poker. But if you have, for example, 1500 net in a poker room, you say you play a poker tournament at Commerce Casino, there will be withholding at 7%. But if you, for example, go to Agua Caliente, which is an Indian casino near Palm Springs, maybe playing high-stakes video poker, there's no withholding because it's a sovereign country, so to speak.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good. All right. So whether we're at 4 or 3 on the stupid thing some of your clients told you.
Number 3. I only had the foreign bank account for 1 week. I don't want to file the FBAR. We've already talked about the $100,000 penalty, and once I explained it, we filed the FBAR.
I'll bet.
Number 2, the side income was only $30,000. Doesn't that qualify for the de minimis exception in reporting income? Well, there is no de minimis exception to reporting income. $1 is reportable. And even if there were, of course, $30,000 is probably not going to be considered de minimis. And twice I heard, the 1099 never showed up. I don't have to report the income, right? And the answer, of course, is wrong. All income is taxable whether or not you receive paperwork. There's a bonus. I had somebody who followed the Irwin Schiff School of Tax Preparation call me. Mr. Schiff, who died at federal prison for tax evasion, he was in there for 20 years, believed the income tax was unconstitutional and all sorts of other arguments, all of which lost in courts, said you didn't have to pay the income tax. So he was correct, though, and anyone can stop paying income tax. He was incorrect in saying you could do that legally. This unnamed individual called me, asked me if I followed the law, and then said he was looking for a tax professional who wants to follow the law, and so far all was good. And he said that since he'd read the income tax was voluntary, he was only going to pay tax on a fraction of what he made. He wanted me to prepare such a return. And I told him as long as the fraction was 100% or 1 over 1, I'd be happy to. Strange, I never heard back from him.
Go figure. It sounds like, well, although we did say you could contact Mr. Fox at rcfox@claytontax.com, it sounds like our listeners are too smart to have Russell Fox as a, because he seems to specialize in dumb people. I don't know how that is. The last question, I had it earlier on the list, but I didn't read it because I don't understand it. Perhaps Mr. Fox does. And it said, professional gamblers, what are the pros and cons of declaring gambling winnings as work income as opposed to ordinary gambling winnings?
Well, there's a couple issues here. I suspect I know where this is going, but I may be wrong. And if the person thinks I haven't answered the question, please resubmit it and the next time we'll get to it. The tax code puts certain kinds of income as that kind of income. For example, sales of stocks and bonds always results in capital gains income, whether it's an individual selling it or an entity. It cannot change its nature. Once it's capital gains income, it remains capital gains income. Gambling income, which in the tax code is called wagering income, is always wagering income. If you have wagering income as a business entity, it is coded as wagering income. Cannot change to anything else. That is written into the tax code. If this individual is talking about filing as a professional gambler versus being an amateur gambler, this is governed by the Gretzinger decision, a case decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. If somebody gambles full-time for their livelihood, they're a professional gambler and file on a Schedule C. As to the pros and cons of declaring gambling winnings as a professional, professional gamblers pay self-employment tax. It is 15.3% of 92.3% of the net income of the business. That's how it's written. And that is in addition to income tax. It's only collected on the federal tax return. Self-employment tax is the equivalent of Social Security and Medicare that employees who work for others pay. So that is a big negative of being a professional gambler. Positive, you get to deduct your necessary and ordinary business expenses. Things like traveling to a casino, if you're doing that on business, that's deductible. And various other things like books by Bob Dancer, those would be deductible for a professional gambler.
Go get lots more deductions, folks.
The cost of gambling with an edge would be deductible.
Uh-huh. All right. We, surprisingly, we got through all our questions, except for the ones that we're going to have to put off till next.
Actually, there was one that I saw that wasn't on your list.
Okay.
That I'm sure you'll be able to answer very quickly, which is if a husband and wife are filing individually, can they combine their gambling wins and losses?
The answer is it depends. And here you get into community property and separate property states. In a community property state, a husband and wife can have a joint business. Nevada, California, are community property states. So somebody gambling, husband and wife, here in Nevada, can file, if they're doing this as a business, professionally, one Schedule C. They can do that. The IRS does not like this, by the way. They prefer that people file as a partnership, a husband-wife partnership. Let's assume that we have gamblers who live in Illinois, which is not a community property state. They're professionals, husband and wife. They would have to file a partnership return of income where they report basically their gambling wins and losses as one lump sum, the gambling business expenses as one item. And this will then split into two what are called Schedule K-1s that would flow through to their personal tax return. And then they would report these on two Schedule C's on their personal tax return so that it goes in the right place. The effect is identical, by the way, as to a joint Schedule C, but those are the rules when you live in separate property states versus community property states. If we are dealing with amateur gamblers, each reports their wins and losses separately. However, the losses are combined. There's only one place for losses on the tax return. All gambling losses go in one item, one particular box, but the wins would be split as to the husband's and the wife's wins.
Very good. Thank you, Russell Fahn. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.